He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And I'd like to start off by saying I've done some car testing in the last week or so related to the Bronco Sport, which is a baby version of the real Bronco that everybody's waiting for to show up. It's a tough and rough one. But I had read a fairly high-praise article on the Bronco Sport, I think online last week, and so I decided to go check it out myself. And I went and drove two versions. One was the three-cylinder turbocharged engine, which I was very, I wasn't very positive that I was going to have a good time in it. And the other was a four-cylinder. The models were the Badlands for the three-cylinder and the Big Bend for the four. No, the Badlands was the four-cylinder and the Big Bend was the three-cylinder. And they're just models within the range of vehicles that come with certain features and certain engine options or standard engines. And I was surprised that I actually liked the three-cylinder engine performance adequately enough to possibly consider it should I ever think of buying a Bronco Sport. And in general, the Bronco Sport was a very pleasing vehicle to drive, in my opinion. Both versions were fine. There were significant differences in the option packages, which made one a lot more pleasant to drive than the other. And that came in the form of A, electrically adjustable seats in the Badlands, the more expensive one, versus a manual, what I call a lever pump system in the other one, which if you pump it, you can get the seat to go up, but you can't adjust it the way you can adjust the electric seat. And what I found about both of these Bronco Sports was a significantly long and protruding hood, along with the design of the hood, which has two raised portions to it, which made, if the seat was too low, quite difficult to look out and see the road ahead. Aside from that, if you could adjust seats to be high enough, that you could solve that problem if you were not a six-foot-tall or taller driver, which your physical length would take care of this seat problem. But anyways, the engines in both were adequate, and I took them on very short excursions. I went up to a property which Jay will know we have for sale in the real estate part of our business, and went up there with each of the vehicles, and there was no problem accessing the land that I'm talking about. And the four-wheel drive systems worked very well. The Badlands came with paddle shifters, which was a marked advantage over the three-cylinder version, which did not come with paddle shifters, and no way to manually shift it, at least in my short use of it, other than putting it in drive and letting the drive the automatic transmission, which was in both vehicles, set the gear that the car needed to be in to do what it was doing. They both have rotary dials in them for off-road and different terrain conditions, much as other SUVs do these days. One includes snow. The Badlands, I think, included rock and crawl versions. The Big Bend did not. But I was quite pleased with the vehicles, and I will stop there. I think they're going to sell well. I'm not sure one needs to wait for the super macho Bronco to arrive if they just want to have a Bronco-type vehicle to do mild off-road driving. And all these vehicles would be great in wintertime driving, which mainly means highway driving and not going up and down mountains.
Well, just to interject here, I think there's no comparison between the two vehicles, and the Bronco Sport is just an entry-level, I mean, not just, but I mean, it's an entry-level Bronco, and Bronco is a new sub-brand of Ford's, and Yeah, and it's a pretty good vehicle. I read reviews about it.
Well, driving it proved that to be the case, Jay, and I think it's going to be a very good vehicle. It's not going to be
It totally has a place in the marketplace.
Yes, it does.
But it's not an off-terrain vehicle as
You're not going to take it on the Rubicon Trail the way you may take the Bronco, the big Bronco.
Yeah.
But you can do all the dirt roads around here. You can climb a hillside. If you're going to show land that has a hilly terrain on it, you'll be able to go in the woods with it and all that.
But that's okay.
What I like about the Sport over the bigger Bronco is the size of it for this kind of situation. When I started out in the real estate business, I started out with small SUVs that were very maneuverable in backwoods roads, which are not necessarily as wide as the highways. And now they've gotten wider and bigger and longer. And the Bronco Sport is a narrower version. I think it's probably narrower than the big Bronco, but it is certainly going to be more maneuverable for somebody like me in the real estate business or any agent that wanted to use it for that kind of driving. And it'll do probably 85% of what the big Bronco could do, which is all most Americans or most drivers are ever going to need. So it's competent in a lot of ways.
So from your drivability standpoint, it's a thumbs up.
It's fine. As an option.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a competent, small, compact SUV, and it joins the group of, in the real world, it joins the place of the Jeep Cherokee.
Yes, it does, and the Toyota RAV4 and all these other SUVs.
The RAV4, the Mazda CX-5, et cetera. So, but it's cool.
It is cool.
I should go test drive it as well.
You should. The headline of this week's automotive news is, lots of scarcity. Let's talk about that in general for the public who's listening, especially if the public who's listening thinks they're going to go out and buy a car of their choice anytime soon. They may not find the car of their choice. I took a drive this Sunday and went down to Tarrington, where there are car dealerships, and I drove through a couple of lots to see what exists in inventory. Mainly Jeep, because that's one of my main interests. And the dealership down there had no used Cherokees readily available to buy. There were a couple parked up in the back lot, which may not have been prepared for putting on the used car lot. They had only four brand new ones, all of which were between $33,000 and $40,000. And the inventory of Grand Cherokees was appalling to me. There were plenty of them, but they weren't anything that looked attractively interesting. But the dealerships on this article in Automotive News are a lot of big city dealers are running out of vehicles. Used cars, the sub headline is, perfect storm of factors make used vehicles a newly appreciating asset. Now, when, Jay, have we heard that the automobile was an appreciating asset other than maybe classic cars that we see in auctions of that have gone up through the roof. But in today's contemporary cars, I haven't heard of any cars that appreciate after you drive off the lot. But with the scarcity situation with new vehicles, and it's going to go on for some time apparently,
yeah,
one article said maybe we could have a chip scarcity for up to 4 years, is driving the car manufacturers and dealerships crazy. And you are not going to see full lots of new cars in dealers, many dealers, for some time to come. You can comment, Jay.
That's fine. There's plenty of perfectly fine used cars around there. And but you're right. We'll see what happens. But right now, I think you can still find cars. But
you
can. It is gonna, and you use the search tools that we all use, and but it is an ongoing issue, and you're right, it's going to last for a while.
And is that is that going to affect everybody from top to bottom, do you think?
Yes,
I think it is.
All the manufacturers are suffering from chip shortages, and the shortage is apparently increasing. The problem is increasing. I know a chip manufacturer in Japan, I think, has just restarted after a fire at their plant. But how quickly? These chips go into computers. They go into many things non-automotive as well as automotive. So the chip suppliers the one in Japan apparently was a major chip supplier and is now just slowly getting building back up. They've started some parts of the plant that was ravaged by fire, and it's going to take some time. I want to shift quickly to the EV topic in relationship to charging stations. I had never thought of the answer to the charging station shortage that I have been harping about for quite some time on this show. And I have a picture in front of me of a telephone pole with a charging station strapped to it. What a solid, useful answer for getting a lot of charging stations available. The use of telephone poles. I don't know who's going to pay to put them up, but it is an ideal solution along streets where there are telephone poles every... I don't know what the distance is between telephone poles is, Jay. Do you know?
I don't know, 100 feet or something? Electric cars parked under every single telephone pole on the highways?
You don't think that this can be done in all...
But I'm talking about urban areas where there are telephone poles along streets. We've been talking about where are charging stations going to be readily available when there are 500,000 electric cars on the road in one city all trying to get charged at once. And
well,
that's
I was
an obvious exaggeration, which will never happen, Jay, so you don't need to correct me on that.
I was at the cell phone parking lot at JFK Airport just over the weekend, and there is a recharging station there with, I would say, at least a dozen terminals, and of the dozen terminals or so, there are only two Tesla adapters, which is kind of odd because Tesla is still overwhelmingly the biggest seller of electric vehicles. But basically, you're going to start finding charging stations that can satisfy all brands and all types of electric vehicles.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to be universal. We've talked about that, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the Tesla joins that. You can get two cables with a Tesla, I think. One, the Tesla cable, and one that's a universal, I believe, will come with a Tesla automobile. So that can solve the problem. But right now, you're right. I mean, we've got a Tesla charging station only at the Stop and Shop in Canaan. There's a Tesla charging station at Dunkin' Donuts down in Waterbury. And, you know, they're popping up. I have yet to see the alternative charging stations located, except at Hotchkiss School. There seems to be a pole with a charging station with two cables hanging off it for two cars at a time. And I saw a Tesla parked at it, and I saw a Bolt parked at it, both with the cables attached to the car. So they were both charging. So that's great for the teachers at Hotchkiss School who have electric cars. I noticed later on that the Bolt was there all day. The Tesla disappeared. So I don't know whether, somebody else might have come or two other cars might have come and needed that charging station, but I don't know who was going to find the Bolt owner to get it to leave, so it could have been an open station for another use.
I have a question. Do you think that in the fullness of time it will be possible to charge the same way, I don't know what the right word is, charge, I'm going to call it charge from space. In other words, just charge.
You brought this up already. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not. And I don't want to belabor it on this show, unless you want to belabor it, Jill.
I only want to belabor it because it seems like belabor is the wrong word. If you could do that.
And charging and batteries and all that are going to come leaping at us almost as fast as electric cars are going to come leaping at us. As this thing ramps up and electric vehicles stop becoming opposed to by buyers and become, you know, a useful tool for people, to alternative for those that want to drive, you know, under 200 miles or 300 miles a day and always come home to their charging station that's going to be at their home.
The word I'm looking for is satellite. In other words, for example,
I don't know that's going to happen, and I don't want to.
About
it.
And here, I will just ask Jay if he has an opinion, and then we will move on to your.
I have no idea.
Okay.
To be honest.
Carry
but
on.
I can tell you that in 10 years we're going to, you know, especially here in Connecticut and New York State, Massachusetts are three of the states that hard going the state of Washington route and planning to ban the sale of new cars, non-electric cars, past 2030.
Or 40. I think the time is going to be a moving target. You know, GM said they wanted to be all electric in their vehicles by 2035. Now they've backed off it and said, we're going to watch the situation. But
right,
the backlash is coming from truck users and sport utility people and all those people that drive long distances on a daily basis. And until there's comfort in fast charging, we're still going to have this issue of charging time for electricity versus just going to a fuel pump at your gas station and filling your tank in 5 minutes or so.
No, I think we're just harping over a moot point now. And the fact of the matter is, you know, you look at companies like Amazon that have, what did we say, they ordered 100,000 vehicles from Rivian, which, by the way, is going to help put Rivian on the market, on the map. And they have a bunch of them already circulating in, I forget which, I think in, it's mostly in fair weather states and cities. I think San Francisco for sure. I think it's Tulsa, Oklahoma is another one of the testing cities for Amazon and their electric van. Yeah, they're coming. Companies like Volkswagen have, you know, somewhat not by choice, made the bold decision to invest heavily in electrification, and they are the funders of this Electrify America chain.
One of several funders, I think.
But, yeah, so it's coming. In the meantime, there are still a few, you know, it's kind of sad because we still like, some of us car guys still like the sound of roaring engines. And I think Porsche Club was at Lime Rock. Must have
they
been
were there. Indeed.
I saw them, and I was thinking about that very thing about the roaring engine, and I think that at some point, I think that people are going
to
want still.
To that end, there are computer-generated noises now available in
some cars. It's like watching.
And they'll do that in electric cars. If you want your roaring engine in an electric car,
you'll
be able to get a computer with a roaring engine sound that at least you can hear. I don't know whether the public will or not.
Can I just say that isn't that sort of like watching a Broadway show ultimately on Zoom? It's like, yeah, fine, good, if there's no Broadway, but for crying out loud.
Yeah. BMW does that with their M models, actually, but and that really bothers me. But back to the Porsches, I saw a few, and there were a few. I saw pictures on Facebook of a few of the cars, the 911s that were at Lime Rock. They were absolutely gorgeous. I saw
a lot of older ones.
What's that?
A lot of older Porsches.
Yeah, there's always a lot of older Porsches,
and
the air-cooled Porsches are obviously the classic. You know what defined the brand, you know, with the 911 that came out in 1964 and was pretty much unchanged until 1998 or 1999. The Porsche just came out with their new GT3, which is the only non-turbocharged engine they have in the 911 lineup.
And it's a great engine.
It's a great engine. It revs at 9,000 RPMs. It is totally not what you can use on the streets. On the other hand, you can use, you know, and yes, they're $200,000+ cars, but you can drive a 911 Turbo as a daily car. And there is a brand new 911 Turbo in our area, and the person driving it drove it all winter long, and it's a daily driver, and I applaud that. And by the same token, I just read an article about a guy who has a 2003-ish 996 911 Turbo with 640,000 miles on it. The guy bought it almost 20 years ago, and it's been his daily driver, and he's been commuting with that car 100 miles.
Hurrah for that guy.
Since.
You know, it's wonderful that people who buy these cars that are actually fun to drive will drive them. And not sit there and put them in a garage and sit there and bring them out maybe just for a day or so a month to exercise them. So I'm all for people who use their cars.
I have a client who's got a 2015 911 Targa with I think close to 120 miles on it.
$120,000
daily driver. And kudos to those people. Not everybody is in a position to do that, of course. And a lot of people have, you know, their 911 is a prized possession, and they certainly cannot necessarily afford to take it out every day. And but this past weekend, we saw people, saw a lot of them at Lime Rock, and it's always nice to see. We are lucky to live in an area where, being next to the track, we see, you know, a lot of nice cars. You'll have Aston Martin weekend later in the year, and hopefully, on another note, hopefully the track will open up and we can start going in.
Well, judging from the article I read about the new owners, it's going to open up as soon as it's legally able to do so, which I'm so excited for the track's future with this trio of owners, along with Skip Barber's, who's still holding a big interest in it. It's not, the majority interest in the track, and at least we know his legacy is going to continue forward with the enthusiastic trio of guys that seem to be really enthusiastic about moving forward and making the track a usable commodity again for them, as well as the public that has the cars that they can play with them on that track. And do you think that was a Porsche club this weekend, Jay?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
All I know is that it's great fun most of the time, except when people get to, it's the old, I'm leaving Lime Rock, I'm on my way to Lime Rock ambition. They're sort of
okay.
Jazzed.
We're getting close to closing.
Yes.
I'm reading a headline saying, fatal crash puts risky behavior in focus. This crash of Toyota, where there were two, where there was a non-driver in the thing, is really goes to the heart of the whole problem of future really self-driving cars. Jay's big on this. I'm not. I don't know how. I hope we're really not going to see on highways, super highways, self-driving cars without, you know, that you can totally let go. My brief encounter with self-driving capabilities includes both a Subaru Forester and a Tesla Model 3. And both of them were on poorly marked roads. And this is a problem when the road lines start fading or they get washed away with grit or whatever it is happen. And the states or the towns do not remark the roads on a regular basis. Both cars, the Tesla and the Subaru Forester, were not good at speed, at making sure they stayed within the curvature of the of a curve on the line. The Tesla went over, at least was touched, the center line was touched on a curve, and this is a curve going to Sharon from Lakeville over by the reservoir. And the Forester, where I drove that, was in Massachusetts and had the same problem of staying well within the driving lane on fairly significant curvatures of the road. And both were not state road. Well, no, the Sharon Road is a state road, but the Massachusetts one was a town road. And I don't think anybody in their right mind is going to sit behind a wheel and take their hands off the wheel for 100% of a trip between point A and point B, and they shouldn't ever be allowed to do so.
Well,
Jay?
I think it's a little late in the game to start arguing the point.
Well, it's going to be late when each person who tries this dies, like these two guys in the Tesla. That was a fool. They said it might have been hacked. I don't know how they got to drive out of a parking lot and get out of the driver's seat if they started and sat in a car at what was reported to be a high rate of speed, and then they ended up in a tree. That car missed a turn.
Poor judgment will always
result
oftentimes have bad consequences.
That is
nothing
true.
To do with the technology involved. To that effect, you know, same thing. I was on 684 last night, and I got passed by a guy weaving through traffic, and 2-3 seconds after that, the blue and red lights were behind me. I moved over, and I saw the blue and red lights pull away in the distance. And I never saw this car stop. So that was certainly not a smart move on the guy running away, and I certainly don't recommend you trying doing that, even though I think the guy probably got away somehow. But more on the 684 thing and driving, another safety tip, really plain and simple. I was driving a fairly nice car but with a lot of miles, and the shocks were totally shot. When we do maintenance on a car, oftentimes we you know we do brakes. We do tires because we see the wear. The wear can be easily assessed in shops, but we forget about shock absorbers. And I think it's really important. And we don't realize the wear is slow, but then all of a sudden the car starts really mishandling over bumps and in wet weather. So change your shocks.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.